Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvi Navaditamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 113. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead can detect their purpose. The karmis want to use the property of the Lord for their selfish sense gratification, but a devotee endeavors to use the Lord's property for God's service. Therefore, a devotee is always distinct from the karmis, although the karmis may dress like devotees. Right? So we can take this dress like devotees either mean they're within the movement, dressed like someone within the movement, acting within the movement, but actually they have material purposes. So that could either be is underlying just the material nature is just so strong that they're not acting in a proper devotional way, though they follow the etiquettes and do everything nicely. But Krishna knows the difference. Or it can mean that just a devotee, his materialistic, attachments that are there, he's not even so much aware of it, but by the process it's going away. So we would just call that mixed devotional service. So that wouldn't be mentioned here. So, or you have those that are not within the movement who follow the Vedic traditions, and so they may look like. And so you have to be very, very careful because they look like and do the things that we do. We don't think that they are, therefore, devotees. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, like we were saying before, the caste Goswamis, some of the others like that. Otherwise, oh no, but they're this, and we take their opinion as very valued. I've seen, you know, quite a few devotees get distracted from this. Because we say one thing, the Goswamis say something else, so therefore then they get involved in the Goswamis, and then they're gone and opening their own, they do their own, you know, program. Right? Does that make sense? So it can be a variety of things. Right? As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 3.9, yagyartat karma no nyatra loko yam karma bandhanaha. One who works for Lord Vishnu is free from this material world, and after giving up his body, he goes back home, back to Godhead. A karmi, however, although externally working like a devotee, is entangled in his non-devotional activity. And thus he suffers the tribulations of material existence. Thus, from the results achieved by the karmis and devotees, one can understand the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who acts differently for the karmis and jnanis than for the devotees. So we can see is because they're getting different results, that shows the Lord is there, because otherwise they're looking the same, doing the same things, but they're ending up with different results. Right? So like we can see is in this pastime, you have the demigods and the demons. Now, as far as etiquettes go and all that, they're both following the same thing. They're all going to be dressed in dhotis. They're all going to have their chuddars. They're all going to be, you know, acting according to the proper etiquette of, you know, respecting seniors and juniors and all these different kinds of things. So they are doing activities that we would generally consider devotional. But we see the results that are gained by the demigods and by the demons are totally different. So that's, we can say, that's the Lord, because he deals with people according to how they surrender. Does that make sense? Yes.
Here we see in this pastime, it's very obvious how, you know, Mohini dealt with both parties.
Right, right.
But sometimes it's not that obvious in, you know, in the normal kind of life.
Yeah.
You know, it appears sometimes the karmis, they're getting more, and then devotees getting, you know, choose what.
Okay, no, but you just have to look at the long term. It's just like, let us just for an example, if you have a bull market, does it ever go down during the rise of the bull market? It means, is it going up? It's not.
It's usually...
Yeah, but I'm saying it's going up, but aren't there little downs?
Yeah, small, yeah.
Yeah, so that small down, during that you'll say, oh, but they're going up and I'm going down. You have to look at the bigger. So in other words, you just look at a bigger circle. So you look at it, if at that circle that you're looking at it, okay, I've been working for X amount of time, they've been working, they're getting, just extend it bigger. Then you'll see over time that it won't. You know, as Manu mentioned, if people are doing things that are improper, you know, actually not dealing, you know, following the rules and all that, then they will, you know, especially if they're insulting and dealing improperly, then it's just a matter of time before then the whole dynasty, it mentions, is destroyed, branch and root. So that means down to the last man, the whole thing's destroyed. But it mentions in there is that may take 2.5 generations. Because you don't know what karma is there from before. The person may have been an extremely pious person, but somehow or another by association of that developed a very mundane perspective. And so because of that, they're born in a situation and that they're not performing seemingly pious activities. So the results of what they're doing now, that will give fruit. So depending on how much piety they did before, it can be so much that it'll go for 2.5 generations. You know, that piety. And then suddenly you just see it just finishes. You know, it's just like you see so many times. Yeah, these wealthy families, they're going along, they've been there generations. And then suddenly in the sun, he just loses everything and makes a mess of everything. He's always in the news. He's crashing his car, running people over, doing this and that, wasting money. And so you see, it's already finished.
So it's from previous.
It's all from previous. Yeah, and so now it's run out. So 2.5 generations means he's doing, but, you know, and it extends it so much good, it extends down to his son and down to his grandson. But unless the grandson is also pious and the son's pious, it won't continue. So then you see that that grandson, he seemed to be nice when he's young, but when he hits teenage and early 20s, then he goes nuts. So that means it's finished.
So it's basically 50, 50, 60
years.
Yeah,
it's just like that. It just mentions 2.5, so somebody maybe longer lives, someone less, but like that. So it goes both ways. It also mentions those who have, you know, been involved in very sinful things, so when they take up Krishna consciousness, the effect can also go for 2.5 generations. But you'll see with that third generation that in there it'll be purified and gone. But the effect of being connected with us, you know, so in other words, the second generation, the weakness is their connection to us is the first. Right, the third generation is connected to the second, but it's not as bad. So then within that generation, it will be purified. That's, you know, seriously sinful stuff. You know, mild, then that's another thing. So. So it's pointing out here is that from this you can tell that the Lord is there because different people are getting different results from the same activity. That's the point to gain. You know, not just, okay, you know, justice is there, but why is it? Because of the Lord. That's the point. So, yeah. The only distinction between materialistic activity and spiritual activity is that material activities perform only to satisfy one's own senses, whereas spiritual activity is meant to satisfy the transcendental senses of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, if someone asks, what if it's both, then that's mixed devotional service. So is it more about Krishna and less about us, or more about us, less about Krishna? It just shows where in that we are. If it's more about us, it's closer to the materialistic. It's lower level of devotion. If it's more about Krishna, it means it's a more advanced. Yes?
Maharaj, it's always black and white in the scriptures, more or less, and it's always gray in our life.
But that's where you understand these two are. So the point is that's how you judge. Is your activity being performed to satisfy one's own senses or meant to satisfy Krishna's?
Both.
But of the two, which one's prominent?
Who knows?
Every muhurta it changes.
Yes, yes. Oh, it's going that way. Yeah, so the point is that's what manana is about. Manana, you contemplate. is that, yes, it's for Krishna, but then you see that there's troubles along with it. So if there's trouble, that means if there's trouble and it bothers you, that means there's something material desire. If there's trouble and it doesn't bother you, then that means it's pure devotional service. Right?
I'm just trying to find an experience in my head when there was trouble and it didn't bother me.
Okay, so then we know that this other side is a little bit more prominent. But the point is if we keep at it, we know it will move forward. Because, you know, in other words, have you had the thought, or what is it, before this moment? Have you thought about this before?
Yes.
Yes, okay. So then you just keep thinking about it, and it will become more obvious. Because that's why it says self-realization, means you can judge.
I can judge.
Okay, yes. But I mean, it doesn't. We don't have to pronounce in this open assembly, but like that. But, does that make sense?
Right. My point was more general in the sense that we judge ourselves, that's true. But it's subjective.
That's why it also mentions Krishna as the judge. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead can detect the purpose. So, in other words, one should try to judge it based on, you know, what is Krishna's standards. If we use his standards, then it's easier to judge where we stand. If it's our standards, then of course we always look really good. You know, we're always going to get that gold star and everything, you know, like that. So that's the whole idea. So that also makes a difference, is whose standards do you use to judge by? If we're using our own, then you know it's more to this side. If we're using Krishna's, we know it's more that side. Like that. Yeah.
Mahesh?
Yes.
Is it that our judging will be towards perfection? When we are advanced and when we are neophyte, we require to get the judgment from senior devotees about our...
No, but it all states, at all points, one's getting judgment from others. But the point is that, and at all points, you should be able to contemplate. Because within one small sphere, you can see within that what you're actually conscious of, how much it's about Krishna and how much it's not. Because someone new is not conscious of much. So what they are conscious of, that's because Krishna's only judging by what you are conscious of. What you're not conscious of, there may be reactions if it's improper, but the point is it won't be as much as if that's a focus. You know what I'm saying? Like children, they're not aware of things. That's why their karma goes to their parents. Right? Because they don't know. But once they get it to the point where they do know, then the karma goes to them. Does that make sense? So like that. Hence, a devotee who does not expect any personal benefit and whose only ambition is to spread the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is blessed with all the auspicious results of bhakti yoga without hard labor. Siddhanta. Okay. So, does that make sense? So the results are coming because they're just focused on Krishna. And so being focused on Krishna, doing devotional service, that's really nice. That's pleasant. So the work, the endeavor that's there, it's not a difficult work. So the results are coming very easily. Right? When the results are coming hard, it's because there's generally something else along with it. So that's what makes it hard. Does that make sense? Yes.
Sometimes we say, more commonly people say, words that we shouldn't be expecting results, we shouldn't be thinking about the world. We see that in the example of Shilpa, he was very specific in what the results should be. Like the situation when he was talking about man, he was saying, there is a lot of temples, a lot of devotees, which is not manifest.
Right.
So how do we properly apply this? Because if we're not thinking about the results,
yes, because it's more than what we expect. That's what the point is here. Someone who's serving Krishna, the results that come are way greater than, because the karma is how much they do is all they'll get. Does that make sense? Like that. That's the point. So, see. not expecting the results doesn't mean that we don't know what the results are supposed to be from that activity. Right? It's a line. You have particular knowledge of a field. It means there's a field of activities. There's knowledge of that field. You combine that knowledge and that field with endeavor, that can produce a particular result. So it's not that we don't know that result, but when that result will come, how much, that's what's up to Krishna. But to say we don't worry about the results means we don't even know what they are and don't care, then that's not a full understanding of what Krishna is talking about. Right? You're going to wash pots, but if you don't know that you're supposed to clean all the pots that are there, then how do you get it done? Right? You know what I'm saying? And if it's just, oh, do it because I said, but the point is what about knowledge? Okay, that's authority, but the point is from authority we gain knowledge. Right? Does that make sense? So only if it's something that, okay, we have a weakness in character, that if we know how much pots we have to wash, then we won't wash any, but if we'll just wash some pots, maybe we can be convinced to finish them. You may use that. Oh, no, it's not, are we supposed to wash all that? No, just do how much you can and all that. And, oh, hey, we just got 5 more minutes, do a few more. And, that's another thing. You know what I'm saying? But if it's a matter of, no, we don't know what the results is, we don't care, we just work, then how is that in knowledge? How is that working in knowledge? How do we know where we're going? The point is we're dependent on Krishna for the results, not that I worked, I got the results. I work, Krishna's pleased, I got the results. Yeah, pleasing, that's what it says here. Hence, a devotee does not expect any personal benefit, and whose only ambition is to spread the glories of the personality of God, is blessed with all the auspicious results of bhakti yoga without hard labor. So, therefore, all the nice things of being absorbed in Krishna, connected to Krishna, that comes without any hard labor. It's just, see, for the impersonalist, trying to improve their character, trying to get to the transcendental platform, is very, very hard work. But the devotee just focuses on Krishna, and he gets all that very, very easily. Does that make sense? So, the point is just focus on Krishna, try to please Krishna. If that's done, then everything else comes very naturally, very easily. Right? Because we say, oh, it's so difficult in that because we're not thinking of Krishna. If you think of Krishna, it's really, really easy. Okay, let's say that we're trying to benefit somebody by an activity that they are not interested in, are not focused on, and they're actually in their own seriously trying to do something else. Will we consider this something nice or not? Right? Will anybody consider this a good activity?
No.
Okay, what if it's feeding a baby? You understand? Totally changes. Trying to dress them, trying to bait them, right? They don't, that, it's just you're trying to dress them and they're seeing a toy over there, they want to go over there. So you have to dress them while they're walking. You understand? Why? Because it's for the person. So is it difficult to do? Is it difficult to feed the child? No, but if you bring in someone who has no relationship with the child, it's insanity. That's the whole point. You connect to Krishna. All these things that seem difficult are very easy. So the more we're focused on Krishna, the easier it is. We're wondering, oh, when will all the trouble go away? When we're Krishna conscious. It's not the trouble going away. It's not the external, interactions that are the trouble. It's our attachments to it or expecting something else. That's where the problem comes to. But if we're focused on Krishna, you don't notice that. Just like for the child. Is there a difficulty, really, in their progressive things on getting their toy? No, they're one, what do you say? Yeah, they're focused, they're going to get that. It's just that, the parents in the way a little bit, but they're focused, and so then they get the toy. So for them, they're just, they see the toy, and they get the toy, and they're playing. They don't notice in between they were dressed. Right? So that's the whole thing. You focus on Krishna, all these things come. And even we see when it's talked about, we'll see later, it's already mentioned it like that, but it'll come up with the Python Sadhu. He mentioned that it'll come up later again, is that for these Paramahamsas, they're so focused on Krishna, they don't even notice that they're eating, sleeping, all these things are going on. They just see Krishna. But the material nature is arranging and taking care of them. They're getting things to eat, they're getting places to sleep, they're protected, but they don't notice. They're just serving Krishna. So it's bringing in another, because before we're used to, okay, the difficulties will be adjusted or this, we're looking at it on the secondary. But here it's shifting it all over to it's on the primary, the secondary will come automatically. As a byproduct. Yeah, we're taking, no, unless I work for it, I won't get it. That's because we think I'm the doer. Like that. Prabhupada was saying is that for the advanced devotees, they don't see any shortage in the world. Right? We're thinking, oh no, there's not enough facility. But for the advanced devotees, they see there's plenty of facility. Because it's all Krishna. It's all because everything that's there, facility is Krishna. So there's plenty. It's just a matter of when Krishna wants to, you know, that particular arrangement will come your direction. But there's no shortage in the world. I probably said about money. It says money's flying in the sky. You simply have to know how to reach your hand up and grab it. You know, there's tons of people. They get an idea, they call up some people, they've made millions. You know? It's that simple. So if we focus on Krishna, then what we're lacking, then it'll all be taken care of. But if we're doing that because we want the benefit, then it goes back to the previous one. But there are many karmis in the dress. So that's why how do you tell is how much is about yourself, how much is about Krishna. So when it's about Krishna, you get everything you want. When it's about yourself, then Krishna will be the judge. Right? Does that make sense? You know.
Trying to do your devotional service and others become upset about your service or what you're doing, is that a sign of Krishna not liking it, or sometimes?
That depends upon who it is. You know, and what's their complaint. You know, means if they want you to go out and pick flowers out in the deity's flower garden, and you come back in 5 minutes and you picked all the flowers. And then, you know, they think that's very nice, and then somebody goes out later in the day and finds that the reason you were so fast is that you took a chainsaw out there, and that way then you picked all the flowers. And so, you know, but you say, but it's so efficient, and then they don't like it. Then you could maybe say, okay, maybe there's something to work on. You know? But otherwise, it's just, you know, you have to see what's the mentality and all that, because you're doing the activity, right? And so that's based on knowledge. So that will give a physical result. But then also, there's an attitude in which you're doing the activity. That will also give an experiential result. Yeah, so you have to see where's the problem coming. So if it's coming in physical, then maybe your endeavor or your knowledge is not correct. If it's coming in emotional, maybe then the attitude or something. Yes, sir. Okay. Chapter 10, the battle between the demigods and the demons. Okay, so it appears that they did not appreciate. Pratigya, the fighting between the demons and demigods is perpetual. It cannot be stopped unless intelligent persons from both sides take to Krishna consciousness. So like that. Yeah, it mentions both sides. No. Yeah, what we're expecting is it cannot be stopped unless intelligent persons from the demon side take to Krishna consciousness. No, it says both sides.
Right? In our mind, everybody's a demon.
Yeah, of course. So they all have to get it together. Yeah, I'm already intelligent. Hey. At Yaya Prakashika. The summary of chapter 10 is as follows. Because of envy, the fight between the demons and the demigods continued. When the demigods were almost defeated by demoniac maneuvers and became morose, Lord Vishnu appeared among them. Both the demigods and the demons are expert in activities involving the material energy. But the demigods are devotees of the Lord, whereas the demons are just the opposite, right? So why are they expert? Because they're following the laws of nature. So that's what it means before, about that you're following the laws, you're getting good work, but if the attitude's not right, then it's going to not be pleasing to the Lord. So it's not that I'm doing the activity. That's what we're taught today. If I have the proper skills and everything, that's what's going to be pleasing. That's what's going to make devotional service. No. Having those skills, wanting those skills to please Krishna, doing those skills to please Krishna, getting the results of, and pleasing Krishna with that, that will please Krishna. But thinking that the skill itself will please Krishna, the demons are already doing that. I mean, so look at what they got. You know, the facilities they have, everything like that, is way better than anybody on this planet has. So as far as skill goes, then they're way beyond us. Right? So therefore it's the attitude in which it's done. The demigods and demons turned the ocean of milk to get nectar from it, but the demons, not being devotees of the Lord, could derive no profit. After feeding nectar to the demigods, Lord Vishnu returned to his abode on the bank of Garuda, on the back of Garuda. But the demons, being most aggrieved, again declared war against the demigods. Bali Maharaj, the son of Virochana, became the commander-in-chief of the demons. In the beginning of the battle, the demigods prepared to defeat the demons. Indra, king of heaven, fought with Bali, and other demigods like Vayu, Agni, and Varuna fought against other leaders of the demons. In this fight, the demons were defeated, and to save themselves from death, they began to manifest many illusions through material maneuvers, killing many soldiers on the side of the demigod. The demigods, finding no other recourse, surrendered again to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who then appeared and counteracted all the illusions presented by the jugglery of the demigods, the demons. Heroes among the demons, such as Kalanemi, Mali, Sumali, and Malyavan, fought the Supreme Personality of Godhead and were killed by the Lord. The demigods were thus freed from all dangers.
This side point, when they are killed by the Lord, the demons, they get liberation?
Depends, that's what we were discussing this morning. Oh, okay. It was brought up, the Antardeep Prabhu brought up from Rupa Goswami's discussing about the Paravastha. So, because Krishna is the most attractive when they're killed by him, then they'll get that. So they're so attracted, they'll get, but the others are not that attracted. So they'll get material benefit. So it just depends on how much that connection to the Lord is there. Or like
because
that.
Previously, what I'm asking, it's previously when they were here in the Mandarana, many demons and demigods died, and then they were revived by the Lord. So this is not the case here.
They're just being rat bags, so they're just killed here. they're not being nice. Shloka Nisharana, verses 1 to 57, the battle between the demigods and the demons. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, the demons and daityas all engaged with full attention and effort in churning the ocean. But because they were not devotees of Vasudev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, they were not able to drink the nectar. But you see, sometimes it depends. If the Lord wants, then they can be liberated. But in that case, what it was showing was the super excellence of Krishna's, as even though all the other forms of Paravastha are directly him, but that mood of Krishna is actually the most attractive. So it's supreme of all of them. So when you say the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, it means, how you say, of the personalities of Godhead, he's supreme. You know, or of those who are supreme amongst the personalities, then Krishna is the top of them. But otherwise, generally, when demons get killed by the Vishnu, then they get liberated. That's why then, in that liberated state, when they get bored, in that because they're purified, they could remember the Lord and go to Vaikuntha. So that's why you see sometimes it mentioned the demons merged into the Lord and then after went back to Godhead, because that's what happens. So. But because they were not devotees of Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, they were not able to drink the nectar. O King, after the Supreme Personality of Godhead had brought to completion the affairs of churning the ocean and feeding the nectar to the demigods, who are his dear devotees. He left the presence of them and was carried by Garuda to his own abode. Seeing the victory of the demigods, the demons became intolerant of their superior opulence. Thus they began to march towards the demigods with raised weapons. Thereafter, being enlivened because of drinking the nectar, the demigods, who are always at the shelter of the lotus feet of Narayana, used their various weapons to counteract the demons in a fighting spirit. O king, a fierce battle on the beach of the ocean of milk ensued between the demigods and the demons. The fighting was so terrible that simply hearing about it would make the hair on one's body stand on end. Both parties in that fight were extremely angry at heart, and in enmity they beat one another with swords, arrows, and varieties of other weapons. Right, because, yeah. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 6. There are always two kinds of men in this universe, not only on this planet, but also in higher planetary systems. All the kings dominating planets like the sun and moon also have enemies like Rahu. It is because of occasional attacks upon the sun and moon by Rahu that eclipses take place. The fighting between the demons and the demigods is perpetual. It cannot be stopped unless intelligent persons from both sides take to Krishna consciousness. Right, so he sees Bali Maharaj takes up devotional service, then the fight stops. Right? You know, Indra behaves nicely, then the fight stops. But otherwise, when they're both on this materialistic mood, because the demigods, they've been defeated by the demons all this time and have lost their position. So they have that enmity. So now that they're confident and power, you know, powerful, they've drank the nectar, they've got the blessings of the Lord, now they're going at it from that angle, rather than take a Krishna conscious standpoint. Otherwise, they could have stopped them at that point. You know, and that. But they wanted to fight with them because they had, you know, grudges to, you know, like that. And then the demons are working on the immediate. You know, they've taken over the universe and they're not looking at that, you know, that's natural, the position of the demigods. They're looking at they got cheated out of the nectar. Right? And so therefore then now they're fighting. So that means both sides are not intelligent. Right? Shri Sukadev Goswami continued. The sounds of the conch shells, bugles, drums, bhedis, and tamaris, kettle drums, as well as the sounds made by the elephants, horses, and soldiers, were both on chariots and on foot, were tumultuous. On that battlefield, the charioteers fought with the opposing charioteers. The infantry soldiers with the opposing infantry, the soldiers on horseback with the opposing soldiers on horseback, and the soldiers on the backs of elephants with the enemy soldiers on elephants. In this way, the fighting took place between equals. Some soldiers fought on the backs of camels, some on the backs of elephants, some on asses, some on white-faced and red-faced monkeys, some on tigers, and some on lions. That would really freak somebody out, coming to battle riding on a lion or something, or a tiger. Definitely people would think that's wild. Okay. In this way, they all engaged in fighting. O king, some soldiers fought on the backs of vultures, eagles, ducks, hawks, and basha birds.
This is the air forces.
Yes, yes, like that. And the ones on ducks, if it gets too out of hand, you just squeeze them, right? You know, and then all the water from the bathtub goes on, you know, with all the suds in their eyes. Yeah, the whole thing. Yeah. Okay. Some fought on the backs of timangilas. Now that's big. Which can devour huge whales. Now it's not. Now can we say, okay, they eat whales? You know, maybe they eat one of those killer whales, or small. No, huge whales. So whatever the biggest whales, that's what they eat. You know, and it doesn't say they have a problem with it. Some at the back of sabaras. Footnote 38. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes. This is an animal with eight legs and the strength of an elephant and lion. Yeah, you don't want to mess with these guys. Oh, Sharabhas. Excuse me, not Sharabhas. Sharabhas. And some on buffalo, rhinoceroses, cows, bulls, jungle cows, and arunas. Others fought on the backs of jackals, rats, lizards, rabbits, human beings, goats, black deer, swans, and boars. In this way, mounted on animals of the water, land, and sky, including animals with deformed bodies, both armies faced each other and went forward. O king, O descendant of Maharaj Prithu, the soldiers of both the demigods and demons were decorated by canopies, colorful flags, and umbrellas with handles made of valuable jewels and pearls. They were further decorated by fans made of peacock feathers, and by other fans also. The soldiers, their upper and lower garments, waving in the breeze, naturally looked very beautiful, right? So that's where it comes from, right? So only the Japanese picked that one up. You know, the guy standing on the edge there, and the wind's blowing his hair and stuff, and he's got his sword like that. But it was the standard thing before, right? If you have a battle, there must be a breeze, right? Okay.
Right. Later, they say that Vyasuti, he fought with Shukracharya. Are they not Brahmins?
Yeah. But
what are they doing here?
They got a long standing enmity, so it's an opportunity.
I was just wondering if they're riding on things like lizards and rabbits and all. I mean, are we talking of demonic mentality in various bodies?
You want to know if the rat's a demon also. Is this a regular rat? I mean, is it a ratatouille rat, or is it a rat, or is it a rat fink? Like that? Is it a rat fink? Rat finks are bad. They always make trouble. The point is that's their carrier. It's just like a horse. It's not that the horse has to be demoniac in that. We're not talking the Ring trilogy here. Right? You know what I'm saying? It's just that he's a rat, and he rides on a rat. Ganesh rides on a rat, so he's got a. So it's not that he has to have a.
On the rat? Not on a mat?
Just one's bigger, one's smaller. This is probably very big, so even if it's a small a mouse, but because it's so big, one will consider it a rat. But you're probably wondering about the cuteness of it.
Yeah,
well, I would expect it's not a city rat. It would be a country rat, so they're less like that. So.
Rabbits,
yeah, it means, what is his name? Robespierre, he'd be riding on a city rat, right?
Yes.
Look,
yeah.
You know, and I think Louis would be riding on a peacock, right?
White peacock.
White peacock, okay. Yes. You know, and I'm sure the rats are big. You know, the lizards, this, that, are big. They're not little dinky things that they're sitting there like this on. Like that. And the reason you get the other guys is because he can't see you. You're so loud down, and then the rat bites his toe, and then when he bends down, you hit him on the head. Like that. No, I don't think they're doing that. I think it's a big rat. You know, appropriate size, yeah. Well, then they could jump, right? Yeah, the thing to do would be a cricket, right? I mean, if he had a huge cricket, he could jump, you know, hundreds of meters in one jump or something.
Kangaroo.
Yeah, big kangaroo. Yeah. And they can fight also. Oh, we're at the top. Because we were on the bottom before, and I'm trying to find where we keep going up. Okay, here we go. Okay. Okay. The soldiers, their upper and lower garments waving in the breeze, naturally looked very beautiful, and in the light of the glittering sunshine, their shields, ornaments, and sharp, clean weapons appeared dazzling. Thus, the ranks of soldiers, so in other words, because here we can see sharp, clean weapons, you know, the upper and lower garments waving in the breeze, so everything's clean, it's nice, so we can understand there were no orcs here, right? So that we can be clear on that point, right? Thus, the ranks of soldiers seem like two oceans with bands of aquatics. For that battle, the most celebrated commander-in-chief, Maharaj Bali, son of Virochana, was seated on a wonderful airplane named Vaihayasa. O king, this beautifully decorated airplane had been manufactured by the demon Maya and was equipped with weapons for all types of combat. It was inconceivable and indescribable. Indeed, it was sometimes visible and sometimes not. Seated in this airplane, under a beautiful protective umbrella and being fanned by the best of chamaras, Maharaj Bali, surrounded by his captains and commanders, appeared just like the moon rising in the evening, illuminating all directions. Surrounding Maharaj Bali on all sides were the commanders and captains of the demons, sitting on their respective chariots. Among them were the following demons: Namuchi, Shambara, Bana, Viprachiti, Ayomukha, Dvimurdha, Kalanabha, Praheti, Haiti, Ilvala, Sankuni, Bhuta Shantapa, Sumba, Nishumba, Jamba, Utkala, Arishta, Arishtanemi, Tripuradipa, Maya, the sons of Puloma, the Kalakeyas, and the Nivadikavachas. So we see some of these later Arjuna will kill, and others like that.
Are they so great, that's why they're mentioned in Bhagavatam?
Yeah, yeah. Means these are big time. So when you know, when you hear that Arjuna killed the Kalakeyas and the Nivadikavachas single-handedly, then you know what great prowess Arjuna is. Because the demigods couldn't defeat these guys. Yes, it must have been the rabbits. You know. What do you call it? You know, when they were on their crusade and they ran into the rabbit? Yes, that rabbit. You don't know that? Okay. You'll fill you in on details afterwards. Okay. All of these demons had been deprived of their share of the nectar and had shared merely in the labor of churning the ocean. Now they fought against the demigods, and to encourage their armies, they made a tumultuous sound like the roaring of lions and blew loudly on conch shells. Balabhit, Lord Indra, upon seeing this situation of his ferocious rivals, became extremely angry. Sitting in Airavata, an elephant who could go anywhere and who holds water and wine in reserve for showering. Lord Indra looked just like the sun rising from Udayagiri, where there are reservoirs of water. Srila Prabhupada comments on verse 25. On the top of the mountain called Udayagiri are large lakes from which water continuously pours in waterfalls. Similarly, Indra's carrier, Airavata, holds water and wine in reserve and showers it in the direction of Lord Indra. Thus Indra, king of heaven, sitting on the back of Airavata, appeared like the brilliant sun rising above Udayagiri. So he looked like the sun coming up, and Balimarj looked like the moon. So in this way, you know, two powerful personalities. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, surrounding Lord Indra, king of heaven, were the demigods seated on various types of vehicles and decorated with flags and weapons. Present among them were Vayu, Agni, Varuna, and other rulers of various planets, along with their associates. The demigods and demons came before each other and reproached one another with words piercing to the heart. Then they drew near and began fighting face to face in pairs. O King, Maharaj Bali fought with Indra, Kartikeya with Taraka, Varuna with Haiti, and Mitra with Praheti. Yamaraj fought with Kalanabha, Vishwakarma with Mayadhanava, Tvashta with Sambara, and the sun god with Virochana. The demigod Aparajita fought with Namuchi, and the two Ashwini Kumara brothers fought with Vrishaparva. The sun god fought with the 100 sons of Maharaj Bali, headed by Bana, and the moon god fought with Rahu. The demigod controlling air fought with Puloma, and Shumba and Nishumba fought the supremely powerful material energy, Durga Devi, who is called Bhadrakali. Right, so in this form, she would be taking that form of Bhadrakali. It's Durga, but when you're going out fighting, then you take on, you know, you have to dress for the occasion. Yeah?
Ladies are fighting too.
What?
Ladies are fighting too.
Yes, but if you saw Bhadrakali, then you would understand. Yes, you might not, yeah. That's why it's what I call it. Shumba and Nishumba, two of them are fighting. O Maharaj Parikit, suppressor of enemies, Arindama. Lord Shiva fought with Jamba, and Bibabhasu fought with Mahishasur. Ilvala, along with his brother Vatapi, fought the sons of Lord Brahma. Durmarsha fought with Cupid. The demon Utkala and with the Matrika demigoddesses. Brihaspati and Sukracharya. Brihaspati with Sukracharya. And Sanaischarya, Saturn, with Narakasura. The Maruts fought Nivatakavachas. The Vasus fought the Kalakeya demons. The Vishvadeva demigods fought the Puloma demons. And the Rudras fought the Krodashva demons, who were victims of anger. All these demigods and demons assembled on the battlefield with a fighting spirit and attacked one another with great strength, all of them desiring victory. They fought in pairs, hitting one another severely with sharpened arrows, swords, and lances. They severed one another's heads using weapons like bunshundis, chakras, clubs, rishtish, patishash, shaktis, ulmukas, prasas, parasvadas, nishtrimshas, lances, parighas, mudgaras, and bindi palas. The elephants, horses, chariots, charioteers, infantry soldiers, and various kinds of carriers, along with their riders, were slashed to pieces. The arms, thighs, necks, and legs of the soldiers were severed, and their flags, bows, armors, and ornaments were torn apart. Because of the impact on the ground of the legs of the demons and demigods and the wheels of the chariot, particles of dust flew violently into the sky and made a dust cloud that covered all directions of outer space as far as the sun. But when the particles of dust were followed by drops of blood being sprinkled all over the place, the dust cloud could no longer float in the sky. In the course of battle, the war field became strewn with the severed heads of heroes, their eyes still staring and their teeth still pressed against their lips in anger. Helmets and earrings were scattered from the severed heads. Similarly, many arms, decorated with ornaments, and clutching various weapons were strewn here and there, as were many legs and thighs, which resembled the trunks of elephants. Many headless trunks were generated on that battlefield. With weapons in their arms, those ghostly trunks, which could see with the eyes in the fallen heads, attacked the enemy soldiers. Now that would be freaky, right? Your head's cut off, but you can still see and you're still running around and, you know, make a movie out of that one. That
one thinking about
it. Definitely can make a movie out of that one. So that means you'd have to throw something in their eyes first, so that you, like some you know, mud or something, then cut off their head. Then, okay. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 40. It appears that the heroes who died on the battlefield immediately became ghosts, and although their heads had been severed from their bodies, new trunks were generated, and these new trunks, seeing with eyes and the severed heads, began to attack the enemy. In other words, many ghosts were generated to join the fight, and thus new trunks appeared on the battlefield. So the whole point is because ghostly forms are attained if death is ghastly. So this must have been such a ghastly war that so many then became ghosts, and then we're still fighting as ghosts. So then that's a problem. Sri Sukadev Goswami continued, Maharaj Bali then attacked Indra with 10 arrows and attacked Airavata, Indra's carrier elephant, with 3 arrows. With 4 arrows, he attacked the 4 horsemen guarding Airavata's legs, and with 1 arrow, he attacked the driver of the elephants. Footnote 39. Srila Prabhupada writes to verse 41. The word Vahan refers to the soldiers on horseback who protected the legs of the carrier elephants. According to the system of military arrangement, the legs of the elephant bearing the commander were also protected. Because they could be fighting on their own, but if the commander's on an elephant, then he would have those who are protecting. Like you see, when Arjuna would go out, then his brothers would be protecting the two, sides of his chariot or different. So it's a very common thing. It's when the main warrior goes, others will be around to protect. Before Bali Maharaj's arrows could reach him, Indra, the king of heaven, who was expert in dealing with arrows, smiled and counteracted the arrows with arrows of another type, known as bala, which were extremely sharp. When Bali Maharaj saw the expert military activities of Indra, he could not restrain his anger. Thus he took up another weapon known as Shakti, which blazed like a great firebrand. But Indra cut that weapon to pieces while it was still in Bali's hand. Wow, so he didn't even release it yet. That's quick. Thereafter, one by one, Bali Maharaj used a lance, prasha, tomara, rishtis, and other weapons. But whatever weapons he took up, Indra immediately cut them to pieces. My dear king, Bali Maharaj then disappeared and resorted to demoniac illusions. A giant mountain generated from illusion then appeared above the heads of the demigod soldiers. From that mountain fell trees blazing in a forest fire. Yeah, not only are trees falling, but they're on fire. It's just, you know, they're not just happy enough to have trees falling. Okay. Chips of stone with sharp edges like picks also fell and smashed the heads of the demigod soldiers. Scorpions, large snakes, and many other poisonous animals, as well as lions, tigers, boars, and great elephants, all began falling upon the demigod soldiers, crushing everything. O my king, many hundreds of male and female carnivorous demons, completely naked and carrying tridents in their hands, then appeared, crying the slogans, cut them to pieces, pierce them. So then, Disney wasn't that far off. Huh? Fantasia, they have a scene just like that.
Maybe he did.
Huh? Yeah, maybe he read this. Yeah. Yes. Fierce. Cut them to pieces, pierce them. Fierce clouds harassed by strong winds. Then appeared in the sky, rumbling very gravely with the sound of thunder. They began to shower live coals. Okay, well, that's a storm you don't want to be caught in. A great devastating fire created by Balimraj began burning all the soldiers of the demigods. This fire, accompanied by blasting winds, seemed as terrible as the Samvartika fire, which appears at the time of dissolution. Thereafter, whirlpools and sea waves, agitated by fierce blasts of wind, appeared everywhere before everyone's vision in a furious flood. While this magical atmosphere in the fight was being created by the invisible demons, who were expert in such illusions, the soldiers of the demigods became morose. O king, when the demigods could find no way to counteract the activities of the demons, they wholeheartedly meditated upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the creator of the universe, who then immediately appeared. Right? So we see they would do this to Arjuna, but then with his arrows he would just clear the illusion. Because he was always Krishna conscious. What happened here is the demons and the demigods, though they have the blessings of the Lord, they're devotees in their enmity with the demons, they weren't thinking about Krishna. So then now that this comes up, now again they remember Krishna. That's what makes them demigods, is that they remember the Lord. Right? The Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose eyes resembled the petals of a newly blossomed lotus, sat on the back of Garuda, spreading his lotus feet over Garuda's shoulders. Dressed in yellow, decorated by the Kastuba gem and the goddess of fortune, and wearing an invaluable helmet and earrings, the Supreme Lord, holding various weapons in his eight hands, became visible to the demigods. As the dangers of a dream cease when the dreamer awakens, the illusions created by the jugglery of the demons were vanquished by the transcendental prowess of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As soon as he entered the battlefield, indeed, simply by remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one becomes free from all dangers. Right, so now that they remembered, he came, they're freed. They remembered, they're freed. Right, so we see Arjuna is always remembered, so therefore never a problem. O king, when the demon Kalanemi, who was carried by a lion, saw that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, carried by Garuda, was on the battlefield, the demon immediately took his trident, whirled it, and discharged it at Garuda's head. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, the master of the three worlds, immediately caught the trident, and with the very same weapon he killed the enemy Kalanemi, along with his carrier, the lion. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 56. In this regard, Srila Madhvacharya says, Kalanemi and all the other demons were killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when Sukracharya, their spiritual master, brought them back to life, they were again killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? Like this. Because I think it's Kalanemi. Does he become Kamsa?
Yes.
Yeah, so he's killed here by the Lord, and so then he'll be killed again.
He didn't learn his lesson.
No, he didn't. Like that. Sri Sukadeva Goswami concluded, thereafter two very powerful demons named Mali and Sumali were killed by the Supreme Lord, who severed their heads with his disc. Then Malyavan, another demon, attacked the Lord with his sharp club. The demon, who was roaring like a lion, attacked Garuda, the lord of the birds, who are born from eggs. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original person, used his disc to cut off the head of the enemy also. Conclusion. The fighting between the demigods and demons is perpetual. It cannot be stopped unless intelligent persons from both sides take the Krishna consciousness, right? So we see the demigods, they became Krishna conscious. Now if the demons, they'll also take up Krishna consciousness. Because the background is not the point. Demoniac means the mentality. So someone's born as the demon because of that preference of mentality. But at any time, someone can take up devotional service. That the example being Prahlad Maharaj and Bali Maharaj. They're born in demoniac families. That's their position. That's their social standing. But they take up devotional service. So it can be done. Like all those in human form can take up Krishna consciousness. It's just very few of them are inclined. That's all.
It's been repeated three times that the parties on both the sides should be intelligent and take devotional consciousness. I was thinking that, it's often said that in Kali Yuga, the demons and demigods will live in the same body.
Right.
We have both the mentalities, and there is a constant fight between both as well. So, considering that, right, how to understand this lesson that both the sides should be intelligent and take up the Krishna consciousness, what does that mean? Considering our situation.
Yes, but the point is it's mentality. See, is here you have a demon and you have a devotee, you have Indra and you have Bali, right? So one has the demoniac mentality, the other has the devotional mentality. But how many souls are there? You have Bali Maharaj, you have Indra. How many souls are there? Cool, okay. Now, when you're talking about Kali Yuga, the demon and the devotee are in one body, how many souls are there?
One.
Okay, so just one of them has to take it up. Okay. Chapter 11. King Indra annihilates the demons. Okay. Pratigya. In this material world, everything happens under the influence of time. Consequently, for a learned person who sees how things are taking place, there's no question of being sorry or happy because of the waves of material nature. Right? So time is taken care, so you can't be happy. It's just a matter of this is what's happening. Consciousness, people are lacking Krishna consciousness. They're affected because of that. That's something to be sorry about. But that the material world is always moving, changing, adjusting, that you can't, because that's just how time works. Right? Well, yes.
So from previous discussion, we see Uttam Adhikaris, they're not disturbed at all.
No.
With the external.
Yes.
Then Kanishthas, they're very much disturbed. So the Madhyamas would be somewhere in between.
In between.
Sometimes yes, sometimes,
sometimes no.
Yes.
Or sometimes, maybe the same situation that bothered them so much before bothers them less now.
Okay.
Like that. You know, so some areas may develop very quickly, some may be a little slower, because as we said, is that to be nicely situated, then is 75%. So that means 25% still left over. So there might be some, that might be all 25% is lessened, or it might be some of those are still quite strong.
Within 25.
Yeah, within the 25. Yeah, but because 75, therefore the shelter of Krishna doing things, it doesn't mean it doesn't bother them, but they will deal with it and connect with Krishna.
So the service basically continues.
Yes.
The service is not disturbed.
Yes. Okay. So you can be steady if it's up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But it does. So, but if we say, oh, but this is happening, how is that happening? No, it's because it's still 25% is there. So there is within pure devotees, there's gradation. So the lowest level is there, you know, within the conditioned state. Then you'll have those within bhava, and then you'll have those within prema. So once you get to prema, then you won't see any problems. If you do, that's your mentality or the arrangement of the Lord. Like that. Adhyaya Prakashika. As described in this chapter, the great Saint Narad Muni, being very compassionate to the demons, who had been killed by the demigods, forbade the demigods to continue killing. Then Sukracharya, by his mystic power, renewed the lives of all the demons. Right, so here, someone from the one side becomes intelligent, so the fighting stops. Right? Does that make sense? That's the whole point. If they had been intelligent, then they would have discussed it and worked something else out. Having been graced by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the demigods began fighting the demons again. with renewed energy. King Indra released his thunderbolt against Bali. And when Bali fell, his friend Jambasura attacked Indra, who then cut off Jambasura's head with his thunderbolt. When Narad Muni learned that Jambasura had been killed, he informed Jambasura's relatives, Namuchi, Bala, and Paka, who then went to the battlefield and attacked the demigods. Indra, king of heaven, severed the heads of Bali and Paka and released the weapon known as Kulisha, the thunderbolt, against Namuchi's shoulder. Wow, the thunderbolt's name is Kulisha. The thunderbolt, however, returned unsuccessful, and thus Indra became morose. At that time, an unseen voice came from the sky. The voice declared, "A dry or wet weapon cannot kill Namuchi." Having heard this voice, Indra began to think of how Namuchi could be killed. He then thought of foam, which is neither moist nor dry. Using a weapon of foam, he was able to kill Namuchi. Thus, Indra and the other demigods killed many demons. Then, at the request of Lord Brahma, Narad went to the demigods and forbade them to kill the demons any longer. All the demigods then returned to their abodes, following the instructions of Narada. Whatever demons remained alive on the battlefield took Balimarj to Asta Mountain. There, by the touch of Shukracharya's hand, Balimarj regained his senses and consciousness. And those demons whose heads and bodies had not been completely lost were brought back to life by the mystic power of Shukracharya. So I guess it was totally done. So they should have had a blender out on the field.
What kind of compassion is this of Narad Muni to abolish killing of demons? Why should demons be...
Because they're also part of the creation. I mean, as long as the problem is not that demons are there. The problem is when demons bother the demigods. The demons stay on their planets and just do their demon stuff. Who's going to bother them? What's the problem? Does that make sense? Like that. They have their they're simply getting the results of their activities, and so then they're doing what they're doing. When they go outside of that and bother those who are not demoniac, that's then when things have to be set straight. Shloka Anusharana. Verses 1 to 45. The battle between the demigods and the demons continues. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, "Thereafter, by the supreme grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Hari, all the demigods headed by Indra and Vayu were brought back to life. Being enlivened, the demigods began severely beating the very same demons who had defeated them before. When the most powerful Indra became angry and took his thunderbolt in hand to kill Maharaj Bali, the demons began lamenting, 'Alas, alas!' Sober and tolerant and well equipped with paraphernalia for fighting, Balimarsh moved before Indra on the great battlefield. King Indra, who always carries the thunderbolt in his hand, rebuked Balimarsh as follows. Indra said, 'O rascal, as a cheater sometimes binds the eyes of a child and takes away his possessions, you are also trying to defeat us by displaying some mystic power, although you know that we are the masters of all such mystic powers. Those fools and rascals who want to ascend to the upper planetary system by mystic power or mechanical means, or who endeavor to cross even the upper planets and achieve the spiritual world or liberation, I cause to be sent to the lowest region of the universe.'" Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 5. "There are undoubtedly different planetary systems for different persons, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 14:18. Urdhvam gachanti sattvastha, persons in the mode of goodness, can go to the upper planets. Those in the mode of darkness and passion, however, are not allowed to enter the higher planets." The word divam refers to the higher planetary system known as Swarga Loka. Indra, king of the higher planetary system, has the power to push down any conditioned soul attempting to go from the lower to the higher planets without proper qualifications. Like, so we sometimes hear about that in the various stories, about someone's going up, and then Indra pushes them down. Like Yayati, he has all the qualifications to be there, unlimited piety. And it's so great that Indra even asks him, do you think that there's anyone else as great as you? Instead of, no, taking the humble, you know, I'm just doing my duties by, you know, whatever, the Lord's great, this and that. He says, no one else has done, which maybe no one else has. But because of that attitude, Indra feels he doesn't belong here, so he pushed him down. Like that. And then, who was it? Trisanko, the Shudra.
Yeah.
He was the Shudra, or he was the one sending him?
No, he was the Shudra.
Trisanko was the Shudra.
And Vishwamitra sent
him. Vishwamitra was sent him, right? So he sends him up, Indra pushes him down, he sends him back up. So he just gets, you know, he's like a ping pong, you know, match. So at one point then Trisanko just says, that's enough, I don't want to come up. You know? Because it was just false ego. Okay. The bodder and the temp. Okay. Indra has the power to push down any conditioned soul attempting to go from the lower to the higher planets without proper qualifications. The modern attempt to go to the moon is also an attempt by inferior men to go to Swargaloka by artificial mechanical means. This attempt cannot be successful. Yeah, because it mentions up here by mystic power, mechanical means. Mechanical means have always been there. Demons like mechanical means. You know, to them it's something, you know, fancy. Like that, mystic power, mechanical means. So it's always been there. It's this whole idea is that now we have it, we've been proved. No, there's always been there. It's just that there's a group of men who aren't interested in all these things, and so then, does that make sense? When you take a line that comes from tribals, then of course, then it takes them a while before they figure these things out. But before they had all these things, they just weren't interested in them. This attempt cannot be successful. From this statement of Indra, it appears that anyone attempting to go to the higher planetary system by mechanical means, which are here called Maya, is condemned to go to the hellish planets in the lower portion of the universe. To go to the higher planetary system, one needs sufficient good qualities. A sinful person situated in the mode of ignorance and addicted to drinking, meat-eating, and illicit sex will never enter the higher planets by mechanical means. Right? Because he says qualifications, so you have to be situated in goodness. So addicted to drinking, meat-eating, illicit sex, that won't work. You can't go there. Because they're situated in goodness. So, Indra continued, today with my thunderbolt, which has hundreds of sharp edges, I, the same powerful person, shall sever your head from your body. Although you can produce so much jugglery through illusion, you are endowed with a poor fund of knowledge. Now try to resist on this battlefield with your relatives and friends. Balimarsh replied, all those present on this battlefield are certainly under the influence of eternal time, and according to their prescribed activities, are destined to receive fame, victory, defeat, and death, one after another. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 7. If one is victorious on the battlefield, he becomes famous, and if one is defeated, he may die. Both victory and defeat are possible. Whether on such a battlefield as this, or on the battlefield of the struggle for existence, everything takes place according to the laws of nature. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai kardamani sarvasaha. Bhagavad Gita 3:27. Since everyone, without exception, is subject to the modes of material nature, whether one is victorious or defeated, he is not independent, but is under the control of material nature. Balimarj, therefore, was very sensible. He knew that the fighting was arranged by eternal time, that under time's influence one must accept the results of one's own activities. Therefore, even though Indra threatened that he would now kill Balimarj by releasing the thunderbolt, Balimarj was not at all afraid. This is the spirit of a Kshatriya. Yudhe chapyapalayanam. Bhagavad Gita 18:43. A Kshatriya must be tolerant in all circumstances, especially on the battlefield. Thus, Balimars asserted that he was not at all afraid of death, although he was threatened by such a great personality as the King of Heaven. Balimars continued. So here, he's intelligent, but it's not the intelligence we're talking about. It means this is intelligent of good character. Right, so therefore, performing Kshatriya duties and all that. But the intelligence we're talking about before means intelligence means surrender to the Lord. That's what will actually stop all difficulties. translate. Yes.
So he knows Dharma, but he doesn't understand Paradharma.
No, that's the point. It's only when he comes behind Vamanadeva, then he understands. Like that. Srila Prabhupada comments, Balar Maharaj knew that Indra, king of heaven, was extremely powerful, certainly more than he himself. Nonetheless, Bali Maharaj challenged Indra by saying that Indra was not a very learned person.
Let's
keep
the verse.
Oh, because they both start off with Bali Maharaj. Okay. Bali Maharaj continued, seeing the movements of time, those who are cognizant of the real truth neither rejoice nor lament for different circumstances. Therefore, because you are jubilant due to your victory, you should be considered not very learned. Srila Prabhupada comments. And so even within the material sphere, there's so much there. That's what I was saying. Pranamoya is overly glorified. But we see that when you get up to Dharma, then you have some semblance of standards. Then when you get to higher understanding of that, then it gets even more. You know, so glory starts there, not really below. Bali Maharaj challenged Indra by saying that Indra was not a very learned person. In Bhagavad Gita 2.11, Krishna rebuked Arjuna by saying, while speaking learned words, you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor the dead. Thus, as Krishna challenged Arjuna by saying that he was not a pandit or a learned person, Bali Maharaj also challenged King Indra and his associates. In this material world, everything happens under the influence of time. Consequently, for a learned person who sees how things are taking place, there is no question of being sorry or happy because of the waves of material nature. After all, since we are being carried away by these waves, what is the meaning of being jubilant or morose? One who is fully cognizant with the laws of nature is never jubilant or morose because of nature's activities. In Bhagavad Gita 2.14, Krishna advises that one should be tolerant. Following this advice of Krishna's, one should not be morose or unhappy because of circumstantial changes. This is the symptom of a devotee. Right? So that's what we're saying. When surrender to Krishna, one comes to that point. Circumstances don't bother you. They may be nice, they may be not nice, but you don't get disturbed either way. We're always worried, being disturbed by things that are not nice. We're not worried about being disturbed when it is nice. But we're not complaining about that. Right, we only find Kunti's making that point. You know, but otherwise, you know, we're quite comfortable. So here is that the devotee, then he doesn't get disturbed by either. That's the whole point. That's then what we're trying to get to. Then if Krishna arranges nice facilities, this and that, then one's not disturbed. One's situated in Krishna consciousness. But if one's disturbed by things when they're a problem, there's a good chance you'll be disturbed when they're nice. Right? So when you give up being disturbed by what's a problem, then you won't be disturbed when it's nice. Then you can get everything. Right? But then at that point, you don't need anything. So, you know, like Krishna. Krishna has everything, but he needs nothing. The devotee carries out his duty in Krishna consciousness and is never unhappy in awkward circumstances. He has full faith that in such circumstances, Krishna protects his devotees. Therefore, a devotee never deviates from his prescribed duty of devotional service. The material qualities of jubilation and moroseness are present even in the demigods, who are very highly situated in the upper planetary system. Therefore, when one is undisturbed by the so-called favorable and unfavorable circumstances of this material world, he should be understood to be Brahma-Bhuta, Srimad Bhagavatam 4.30.20, or self-realized. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 18.54, Brahma-Bhuta prasanatma na shochati na kankshati. One who is transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. When one is undisturbed by material circumstances, he should be understood to be on the transcendental stage, above the reactions of the three modes of material nature. The background of? How do you mean by background?
He's not happy or disturbed.
Yes. But what do you mean by background?
They said the scene in which performed.
Yes, that's what they do. So whatever the situation, he's Krishna conscious and is Krishna conscious in that situation. So if that by engaging it or by just remembering Krishna, whatever is that, yeah. Did we finish this page? Yes, okay. Bali Maharaj continued. You demigods think that your own selves are the cause of your attaining fame and victory. Because of your ignorance, saintly persons feel sorry for you. Therefore, although your words afflict the heart, we do not accept them. Footnote 40. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments. You think that you are the cause of victory and defeat because of pride and ignorance. Just as you, though living, are condemned by the virtuous, we, though dead, will not be criticized. Right? So he'll be alive, but they'll be condemned by the virtuous, and he'll be dead, but he will not be criticized. Right? Because he's dying in knowledge, while he's due to, how do you call it? Pride and ignorance.
Why he's saying that, Mark? I mean, he was fighting the same way as demigods were fighting, so what's the difference?
Because Indra made his point. They were just fighting, so they're fighting. They got some enmity. But then Indra made all those comments before. You know, oh, you're just going by, where is it? Oh, rascal, oh, cheater, sometimes binds the eyes of a child and makes away his possessions. You are trying to defeat us by mystic powers. Those fools and rascals who want to ascend to the upper planetary systems by mystic power and mechanical means, or who endeavor to cross even the upper planetary systems and achieve the spiritual world of liberation, I cause to be sent to the lowest region of the universe. Although you can produce so much juggling through illusion, you are endowed with a poor fund of knowledge. Now try to resist. So he said that he's ignorant, so then Bali Maharaj just returned the compliment. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, after thus rebuking Indra, king of heaven, with sharp words, Bali Maharaj, who could subdue any other hero, drew back to his ear the arrows known as Narachas and attacked Indra with these arrows. Then he began chastising Indra with strong words. Since Bali Maharaj's rebukes were truthful, King Indra did not at all become sorry, just as an elephant beaten by its driver's rod does not become agitated. When Indra, the defeater of enemies, released his infallible thunderbolt scepter at Bali Maharaj with a desire to kill him, Bali Maharaj indeed fell to the ground with his airplane, like a mountain with its wings cut off. 41. Srila Prabhupada writes to verse 12, in so many descriptions in Vedic literature, it's found that mountains also fly in the sky with wings. When such mountains are dead, they fall to the ground. Here they stay as very large dead bodies. So that means these, how do you call it? What do you call it? They're into going out, adventure. You know, like that. They go out for this adventure to go climb a very large dead body. So they're not looking at it exactly like that.
They used to fly in the sky and used to fall off, and that's the reason why, you know, many of the Brahmins were being disturbed. And that's the reason why Indra, he cut off the wings of the mountains.
But not at this time.
Yeah, not this time.
But even if it is, still the principle is the same. Still, as Bali Maharaj is there in his chariot, I mean his airplane, like a mountain. He's so powerful in that. So him falling out of the sky is like the mountains falling out of the sky when their wings are cut or when they die. So it appears it's not uncommon they'll be flying and die while they're flying. So nowadays, because he cut off the wings, it's not that all mountains are dead. Some of them must be dead, but some of them must be alive. So just they don't have wings.
Because the mountains are flying,
Yeah, no, Indra cut off their wings.
Yeah,
yeah. John.
But why, we, there is a concept of living stone still, right?
That's another thing. So we're talking about the whole mountain. When the demon Jambasura saw that his friend Bali had fallen, he appeared before Indra, the enemy, just to serve Bali Maharaj with friendly behavior. The greatly powerful Jambasura, carried by a lion, approached Indra and forcefully struck him on the shoulder with his club. He also struck Indra's elephant. Being beaten by Jambasura's club, Indra's elephant was confused and aggrieved. Thus it touched its knees to the ground and fell unconscious. Thereafter, Matali, Indra's chariot driver, brought Indra's chariot, which was drawn by 1,000 horses. Indra then left his elephant and got onto the chariot. Appreciating Matali's service, Jambasura, the best of the demons, smiled. Nonetheless, he struck Matali in the battle with a trident of blazing fire. Although, because, you know, he's just so there, his master has fallen, immediately comes forward, because otherwise here's this big demon, he just destroyed his carrier, not, then he's also the carrier, so he could be, no, but immediately he comes forward. So Jambasura appreciated the proper attitude here. Although the pain was severe, Matali tolerated it with great patience. Indra, however, became extremely angry at Jambasura. He struck Jambasura with his thunderbolt and thus severed his head from his body. When Narad Rishi informed Jambasura's friends and relatives that Jambasura had been killed, the three demons named Namuchi, Bala, and Paka arrived on the battlefield in great haste. Rebuking Indra with harsh, cruel words that were piercing to the heart, these demons showered him with arrows, just as torrents of rain wash a great mountain. Quickly handling the situation on the battlefield, the demon Bala put all of Indra's 1,000 horses into tribulation by simultaneously piercing them all with an equal number of arrows. Paka, another demon, attacked both the chariot with all its paraphernalia and the chariot driver, Matali, by fitting 200 arrows to his bow and releasing them all simultaneously. Wow. Hell's got a ways to go. This was indeed a wonderful act on the battlefield. Then Namuchi, another demon, attacked Indra and injured him with 15 very powerful golden-feathered arrows, which roared like a cloud full of water. Other demons covered Indra, along with a chariot and chariot driver, with incessant showers of arrows, just as clouds cover the sun in the rainy season. The demigods, being severely oppressed by their enemies and being unable to see Indra on the battlefield, were very anxious. Having no captain or leader, they began lamenting like traitors in a wrecked vessel in the midst of an ocean. 42. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 25. From this statement it appears that in the upper planetary system there is shipping, and that traders there engage in navigation as their occupational duty. Sometimes, as on this planet, these traders are shipwrecked in the middle of the ocean. Traders are shipwrecked in the middle of the ocean. It appears that even in the upper planetary system, such calamities occasionally take place. The upper planetary system in the creation of the Lord is certainly not vacant or devoid of living entities. From Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand that every planet is full of living entities, just as Earth is. There is no reason to accept that on other planetary systems there are no living entities. Yeah. Okay, so we'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Chaitanya Gaura Prema.